This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's go!
Ooh, what's up, everybody? This is Binchtown TV, and we are back with our coverage of Mike Flanagan's Midnight Mass with Episode 7, titled Book 7, Revelations. And we finally finished, baby! Thank God we can finally talk about the entire series. Give me some hot takes, boys.
First of all, I love the story, but I don't know. I felt like it needed another episode. I felt like it left something to be desired. But I did enjoy it. It was a great show overall. I think out of the three being Hill House, Bly Manor, and Midnight Mass, I would put Midnight Mass at 3. But still, overall, it was really good TV, and I loved it.
So I think I said on the podcast, maybe not the last one, but the one before, that I was pretty firmly having Midnight Mass above Bly Manor. I've been going back and forth on it, and I still think I have Midnight Mass slightly ahead. Obviously, it's lower than Hill House. Just the ending was, it hit on so many levels except for the angel. And I know we've been texting a little bit about it, and I just absolutely think it failed in whatever they were trying to accomplish. The mystery wasn't satisfying at all, and the writing kind of fell apart and didn't make sense for the angel. But pretty much everything else, like the emotional hits, were great for me. We were killing it with all of our Father Paul guesses, and he did exactly what I wanted him to do in the way. I couldn't have asked for him to turn good in a better way.
Yeah,
all that was fine. It definitely just felt like this didn't have the same tone as all the other episodes of the series. It felt like kind of like a Walking Dead episode for half of it.
Thought the exact same thing. I was like, this feels like a horror movie, mm-hmm. like in a Halloween-y movie. I was like, I actually like this vibe. For me, I'm just glad that it ended the way it did, where everyone died, basically, besides the two kids. Fuck yeah. We were saying that for episodes, that we kind of hope this takes a turn where not everyone is in love and happy at the end. You know, there was no other way to end this other than pure destruction. And that's exactly what happened. And Bev got what was coming to her. So,
Kathleen, give us your ranking, since everyone else already started with their ranking.
I think my ranking goes in the order they dropped: Hill House, Bly, Midnight Mass. I think all three are above average TV, and just because Midnight Mass is last doesn't mean I didn't like it. I thought it was enjoyable. I love the actors. I liked the story. Like I said before, religion just isn't for me. And that being the base of it, it couldn't possibly have beaten Hill House, which is a perfect season of television and would rank against any of my favorite TV shows. Bly, that love story, you can't beat it for me either.
The rest is confetti, Kathleen.
The rest is just confetti, bitch.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all three of you guys for the most part. I thought they nailed a lot. I thought the angel part they kind of missed. I agree 100% that it was almost like you're watching more of like an action slash horror TV show in the last episode. But I enjoyed it. I really did enjoy the entire season. All three of them, like Kathleen said, great television. Hill House for me is so high up on a pedestal that Bly and Midnight Mass don't even come close. I think I would go Midnight Mass then Bly. I would need to give it a little time. Recency bias might change that for me. I might as well really quick get into this, since I didn't think we were going to talk about it now. I thought we were going to wait till the end, but I did a little poll in some of our Haunting of Hill House, Bly Manor, Midnight Mass Facebook groups, and we got some interesting takes here. I asked, you know, everyone to give their rankings. And I just letting you guys know the number ones and the number threes, meaning what most people said for their favorite and what most people said for their least favorite. So I counted out of all the people that commented, which was a good amount. So thank you, everyone, for commenting. 22 had Hill House as their number one. 5 had Bly as their number one, and 5 had Midnight Mass as their number one. So Hill House took that one by far, and then Bly and Midnight Mass were a little bit similar to for people's liking as number one. Now, when we get to number 3, we had 15 for Midnight Mass, 14 for Bly, and 3 for Hill.
And yeah.
I actually went through that, and I was thinking for the longest time we were going to get 0 Hill House is saying that that's the least favorite, but towards the very end, we got a couple. It's very important to say, though, almost everybody who commented was like, listen, these are all great. Love them all. A lot of people didn't even want to put their rankings because they love them all and because they think since they're so different, they don't deserve to be put up against each other. Sure. And that's true. I mean, just because it's Flanagan doesn't mean they all have to be similar. You can argue Hill House and Bly just because they're in the Haunting anthology. But Midnight Mass is its own separate thing. It was interesting to do the poll anyway. And yeah, Hill House is the GOAT.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by any of that.
I think that right now, and again, it's always recency bias when we're podcasting like a day or so after watching it. But I think if I was to recommend it to an average person that isn't super into horror, like one of our friends that hasn't watched any of the series, I think if I made them sit down and watch both Bly and Midnight Mass, I would guess that most would walk away liking Midnight Mass more. I just think it has a little bit more appeal. And you know how the whole twist, spoiler alert for Bly, is it's a love story.
Yeah.
That could be a little bit of a turnoff. And if it's not your thing, I could see why not. I thought Bly had a slightly more satisfying ending, but the journey there wasn't as good versus Midnight Mass, where I think Midnight Mass's ending didn't like crush it for me. But honestly, episodes 1 through 6 were just so freaking good. I couldn't wait to keep pressing next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's kind of my thing about the all three shows is they're so, and Jimmy said it and everybody said it, they're so different. Like the way I look at Hill House, it was just like a story that was so good from start to finish and chopped up and all over the place, jumping back and forth. For Bly, for me, it started slow and then picked up at the end. And then for Midnight Mass, for me, it started pretty nice. And then kind of, not saying the end was slow because shit was hitting the fucking fan.
I mean, yeah.
It's crazy. But it ended a little bit more on the down note for me personally. And mm-hmm. I think that's why I rated it lowest, but it was still sweet. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I was actually pretty surprised, Luke, that you were okay with the finale. And again, you aren't okay with the angel, and we'll talk about that. But I honestly thought that we got less answers in general than I was expecting about everything. And when I say everything, the angel should be everything. You know, we wanted so much from the angel. We wanted to know so much about it, and we got really nothing.
I was describing it to someone who didn't watch it, being my roommate and Dave. I don't know why I can't just say Dave because we're here. But so I was describing it to Dave, and I was telling him that I really liked it like as a whole. But if there was like 3 or 4 main storylines going out throughout the whole thing, like the Riley and Aaron whole thing, I thought was great. Just the resolution of Father Paul was fantastic. And I thought all of the what happened to all the vampires was good. It's just the 4th main storyline thread being the angel just was awful. And
yeah,
that was the kind of the one that this show is going to be defined by and the most important, which is why it leaves such a bad taste. Because if they hit that one and missed on how, like, I don't know, everyone else died was a little bit worse, but they explained the angel in a satisfying way, I think I would have walked away being like, all right, this crushed Bly.
Yeah.
See, I kind of think that the angel was really just the prop to see how the people on the island would react to this. Mm-hmm. And we get kind of 2 camps, right? I mean, we had Father Paul, whose intentions were so pure. I mean, he said, if you're a priest, you see so much death, right? And I've never really thought about that. I mean, people come to you with all their problems. People come to you when they're dying, etc. Besides the fact that Father Paul was like, I just didn't want you to die to Millie, which I totally get. That's very human of him. Not that selfish of him. Bev is the other end of it, where she's just a fucking monster. She's blindly following. She's the worst kind of Bible banger in the entire world. And it's kind of showing that, right? I mean, Father Paul realized his mistakes by the end, and it was devastating watching him die with a dead Sarah and the love of his life, which he watched from afar for so many years and couldn't like have his family. I didn't mind the angel thing. I only thought it was fucking weird because I thought you guys were right, being like, if he's dressing up in episode 6, he's got to have some sort of sentience to do something to be more in episode 7. That's where I think was a miss.
He was so much more bestial in 7.
Yeah, if he wasn't like when he was just like getting it with Kate Siegel with Aaron Green, she's just like slicing him up and he's just gonna just keep eating.
I thought it was ridiculous when he's in the house and he's eating and they're just lighting him up and shooting him. And he's just like, rah, 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 I'm going to eat. I want to keep chomping.
I get the whole point is, you know, he's so entranced by this blood. That was the whole thing with all the other villagers. They see it and like they can't even think. They just go for it. But to be shot in the face like multiple times and not even like push them away and then go back to it, I was kind of annoyed. And I get the whole point of that scene was to set us up for, you know, the slicing up the wing scene and to give Sturge the gun is what I was assuming, which I was happy the gun came back because.
What?
Good call.
We're
great call.
Just because we're freeballing it because it's Binge Town TV, we do whatever the fuck we want. We're going to go in on this ending because we just have to. But actually, I didn't even realize that, but that was a good point that not that I liked how he didn't care that he was getting hurt at random points, but you're right that it did set it up for him to just take the knives. So I guess that makes that a little bit better from the Aaron thing, but it shouldn't have happened with Warren and Lisa anyway. So that was like a miss, but I definitely think that was stupid as shit. Who greenlit the idea to let him have that voice change moment? That was just the worst piece. And that might be my singular least favorite piece of writing for the entire seven episodes.
That is that they teased this mysterious echo and then showed that he could reciprocate like a voice and then just didn't touch on it at all. And we were like, oh, we have to get it in the finale. It'll explain everything. And then got nothing.
I just think for me, it's like super lame that he's just entranced with this human blood than all the rest of the vampires. Have a little better taste. Be a little more self-aware. Even when he's flying away at the end, it's, bro, how old are you? And you're getting caught in the sun? Yeah. What the fuck? Also, I don't care how many buildings they burnt down. There is shade.
There is shade
in this town. Go find it.
I couldn't agree more. I was like, wrap yourself in a few blankets. Wait out the night and then build some type of
could have done what Bev was attempting to do super late, which honestly, for a second, if she did it early enough, I thought she was going to live.
She was like an ostrich and just buried her hand in the sand and like didn't get burned by everything.
We nailed all the Bev guessing. Maybe you guys a little bit more than me because I wanted her to be not just cookie cutter, just full evil. But I think it was Kathleen or Jimmy, someone said that she was going to had a chance to become the big bad because we all predicted Paul was going to turn. Father Paul was going to turn.
Which we were talking a little bit negative. Father Paul, highlight.
Incredible.
Of the show.
Still
so S tier.
Didn't lower himself at all in either across all three as like a top five character.
I think he's my favorite character out of all three, which is crazy to say. I think he's my favorite individual character out of Haunting, Bly, and Midnight.
Damn, I have to think about that one.
Yeah, I would have to think as well. Yeah, let's get back to that.
Acting off the charts from Hamish. All right, Linklater. But again, I think like Paul said, let's move on to some of the positives because Aaron Green, Katie Siegel, like she is a true hero in this show. I mean, ever since she saw the Riley thing, she was always kind-hearted, good-hearted. She was always going to be good. And once she saw the Riley thing, she really took this in her own hands to be like, we got to fucking stop this. She found Sarah, got Millie and Sarah involved. And in episode 7, when she says something to Riley's mom, or whoever she said it to, she was like, this isn't about us anymore. Like, we are going to die for people we haven't even met yet. She basically reckoned with death.
Very Christian of her.
Yeah, Christian. They all were just like, yeah, we're going to have to die for this.
Yeah. That's cool how it kind of turned into what the fuck's going on in my small little town to we're going to save the world.
Yep.
Like, we need to burn these motherfucking ships.
Mm-hmm. The moment of them all realizing them being Bev and everybody that they burned the ships, they had already all burned all their own houses down. Completely unnecessary. Totally. I mean, I guess that takes away the plot hole of how do you know people aren't still in that town? Like, how do you know you got everybody type deal? But if they burned every building and no one's out and about, I guess you could say that. But
I don't know how I feel about it. I loved that Bev basically doomed herself, that like she got so caught up in the moment. She was like, burn everything. She saw fire and immediately related it to something in the Bible where it was like, oh, we need to burn everything down. She ended up being her own demise, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, how dumb are you? Like, you're going to burn literally everything, save one house, or I guess two because of the church.
Like, she thought the church was going to be okay.
I do like that they at least addressed it, because we said, like, what is the song going to come up and just kill everybody?
Yeah.
And at least they put the effort in, Flanagan just addressed it by doing that. And that makes it a little better. Like, I didn't walk away hating that at all. So it was addressed. So back to like the angel for a second, we were talking about him having to have some sort of intelligence and a goal. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually okay with the idea of the whole goal was going to be survive the night, then take the boats, go to the mainland, and literally make it's a disease, virus, contagion thing that's just going to eventually spread across the world. And the idea of it biblically, like, starting in that town of religious, just, you know, idiots, gullible people, right?
Yeah.
That I kind of like that. That was okay. It's just the fact that someone said it, he was way more beast-like this episode.
Yeah.
Like, he shushed Father Paul in episode 5. Like, and he was thinking, and then
he does
the clothes. Is such a, like, he had to think that out and do things. And, like, some of his killings were strategic. Like, killing Aaron could have been partly strategic, right? At the end when he grabs her. And then killing Millie in the church scene last episode was slightly strategic as well. But then he's just like an animal that just needs blood. I didn't like all of that because it just didn't seem consistent with how they were leading up. And if they just tweaked a couple little things about him, I think it would have been great.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. And going back a little bit ago to what Kathleen was saying about how she was okay with it just because she is thinking the vampire / beast / angel is the purpose is to see how the people react. And we probably should have been expecting this, because we know that when it comes to horror, Flanagan's the man, but he's about the story. He's about the characters. So we probably should have been expecting that he wasn't going to put as much emphasis on the horror portion of it than the people portion of it. Not that I'm giving any excuses, because I still think that there was some plot. There was definitely plot holes and things that I would have very much so liked to be explained. We probably should have figured that he was going to emphasize the people and just let the vampire kind of be a side thing for the episode. Yeah. All right, guys, let's take a quick pause here, because I have something I want to talk to you about. Spooky season is here, and we couldn't be more excited. If you're anything like the Bingetown crew, then I know you're craving some spooky content. Movies, TV, podcasts, you name it, and we'll try it so we can fill our spooky needs. Well, one thing I personally have never really given a chance to are horror books. Well, I'm ready to jump into some juicy horror books, and I have just the book for us all, The School Bus by Richard McCrohan. On one tragic October day, a school bus on its way to a third grade field trip filled with children becomes involved in a horrible accident along a lonely mountain road. The loss of life is terrible and sends the town into a tailspin. 10-year-old Jimmy, I like that guy's name, Jimmy Freeman, and his four friends have heard all the stories and rumors of that horrific event and want to go and see the site for themselves. But there are some things that are better left alone. The School Bus by Richard McCrohan is a terrifying ghost story in the vein of Stephen King and Stand By Me. Available on Amazon in paperback and ebook, or on audiobook at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. The School Bus by Richard McCrohan, if you dare.
So, like, the theme of Bly Manor at the end, we got, like, it was a love story. I was trying to think of, all right, what is the theme of Midnight Mass? What happens after you die? Was that the whole point, or was there not really a point? But it was the monologue at the end from Erin, where it was her second monologue of the show about death, and then like the third or fourth overall. So I was thinking, like, that's the whole point, is like
it also
living
that. And I also think just the whole faith point of it all. I mean, I am so not religious that honestly it didn't really sit with me to be like, wow, like, I can't see the bigger picture, because that's how much I do not care. But there is a story to be told there about religion and people who, like, blindly follow it, or like certain aspects of religion. I mean, Mike Flanagan has said this is created from a story of him, like, growing up Catholic, losing that faith, coming out of it, trying to find his own way. It's a story of that too. It's all of those people on the island trying to figure themselves out, and through religion or not. And I don't know. I think specifically Owen's character was a great contrast of there's someone like Bev who is Catholicism, bitch. And then he's like, yeah, guess what? I studied the Bible. I know the Bible. He's like, I'm cool. I'm down with Jesus. We're all down with Jesus. You're just completely throwing away all these other things just because you've never even learned about it. You have no idea.
They'll see something and just make it make sense in the Bible and then just run with it and like end up being their own destruction.
And Kathleen, when you say Owen, you mean the sheriff. You're saying Owen from Bly.
Sorry. Yep.
But I think I had pretty much the same takeaways as you about the religious aspect, where that's what he was going for. And because of how I feel about religion in real life, I liked it because it's like, dude, you're an idiot.
Well, totally. But I don't think I don't think Mike Flanagan's complete story for this is religion is fucking whack, dude. Like, I don't think he's going for that. We think that because we were like, that's fucking whack. We would not have killed ourselves in that church. We wouldn't even been in that church in the first place. But that's just us. That's not what he was saying. And I feel like because I thought that way that I didn't fully get it.
Well, Kathleen, what would you do if you're living in a town and these miracles are happening? I mean,
okay,
you're saying you wouldn't be in the church. I get it because you're not religious now. But if you see the miracles, you might start being like,
I'm bouncing. Unless I grew up completely from there, but I would have a different brain than I do now. Like if I'm Riley and Riley was still like, kind of like, what the hell's going on? But I will raise you another question that reminded me. So at the very end, our only two survivors are Lisa and Warren. Lisa's legs no longer work. Mm-hmm. How do we feel about the miracle being reversed?
I didn't like it at all.
Let me say that I read something. I should have clicked on the source to make sure, but someone was quoting Flanagan's take on that, and they were asking Flanagan in an interview or something along those lines, like, what was the deal with it? Is that confirmation that the angel is dead? And he said it's not. The way he worded it was like that the concentration of the sack was worn off enough in her, which I don't know how much I love that for two reasons. One, he still wanted to emphasize the fact that it's open-ended about if the demon lived.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then second, it's like, okay, she was one of the most religious people in there. And just coincidentally fell apart as the sun comes off. That's the little bit of a weird writing part.
She had the highest concentration because she was going every day.
And she's small.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's a tiny little.
And she's small.
Sarah does have a scene where she explains that theoretically the sack can leave your system, but she doesn't say it would reverse the effects, but she basically is saying that you can still be saved as long as you don't change. So I did see exactly that article. I'm pretty sure it's quoted correctly. Like, I'm pretty sure it's legit. And Flanagan did say that it doesn't necessarily mean the angel was killed. And open-ended, do we need open-ended at this point? Not really. I mean, people are saying, is there going to be a Midnight Mass too? Which, I mean, I don't know. I don't need that.
But I guess that does semi-explain, if you're going to stay consistent with the concentration being able to leave that fast, it does explain why Erin didn't become a vampire, because she would have had significantly less in her, and she also died 5 minutes before Lisa like lost her legs, right? So I guess it makes sense why she wouldn't have rezzed and started healing, right?
Yeah, and I want to push it further and say, thinking that everyone died, right? So whoever comes to this town, burnt houses, burnt bodies, ash if it's not already blown away into the water. The only two people left are Warren and Lisa. How do you explain this away? Lisa can't even like explain it. If they're both worn out, they don't even have it in their blood anymore to be like, check my blood. Her legs don't work. Plus, Wade and her mom didn't even tell anybody that this miracle happened. You know what I mean? Where they're like, go to the mainland, get tested. And they're like, nah, like that would have been proof that at least that, hey, I used to be able to walk for a couple of days and now I can't walk anymore. There's no way to tell this story moving forward. Mm. As specifically within the world with Warren and Lisa, like, how do you move forward from that?
It would suck to be that.
I would just really be like, I wish I died.
Specifically Warren. Lisa can't walk. You have to go to the mainland, somehow eat, sleep, start living, and get over that mental baggage of your whole, every person you've ever met died.
Yep.
That is a crazy life. I am not jealous.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's the point of the whole thing is that, like Kathleen's saying, there is no way to prove it. So it kind of just wipes everything out.
Yep.
And the entire story is wiped out. So that could be part of why Flanagan did that. But yeah, their lives are awful right now. I guess they're just going to have to get back to land, wait for the ferry, and then try to explain why everybody's dead.
So what happened with the blood samples? Sarah and Aaron and Millie were going to take them, but then they couldn't
because the boats.
All the boats. And then
you got to assume they burnt down with the houses or wherever they put them.
They gave it to Warren because they knew they were going to split up. They said, like, hey, go. I guess that was after the whole church fiasco. So that's really going nowhere.
The only mainland interaction we had on record would
Sarah's
have been
girlfriend.
No. Oh, OK. Yeah, that. But that wouldn't. Which that never came back to play, but it didn't matter. That was, oh, we already described that as her being against the church for that reason. Yeah. But no, it was when Erin got tested and she was never pregnant on the mainland. She said, I'm going to have my doctor send you the results and stuff and show you I had an embryo in me. But that never happened mm-hmm. and we never got that far. So yeah, there's pretty much, it's wiped clean and everyone is just going to think Warren and Lisa are just insane.
They would have to be suspects. And like murdering an entire town, right? Like mm-hmm. you guys started a fire yeah. that obviously burned everything down. Okay, so there was this vampire. Hear me out. Hear me out.
There's a few cool things I really liked in this episode. So I really liked Riley's mom stabbing herself in the throat to stall.
Dude, Annie was epic. The shit.
MVP. So cool.
Remember last episode I said, who's going to have the pleasure of killing Bev?
Yeah.
I said, I weirdly thought it was going to be Annie.
Yeah.
You did. You absolutely did.
She didn't kill Bev, but she did give her a stern verbal spanking.
Yeah, she did.
Which I loved. I was like, put her in her fucking place, Annie. And then take one for the team.
I don't need words with you, Annie Flynn. I would like Erin Green. I really like Bev's actress. I think she killed this role. I think this role, you couldn't possibly ever be liked. But if you know how to play a villain, I think she nailed it. I mean, she did exactly what was on the page and then crushed it. So I would like to shout out Bev Keane's actress because I think it was really, really well done.
That was super consistent with her character for letting Annie go. She's like, I have no quarrels. You were super religious.
Yes.
Let it go.
Yeah.
But dude, Annie, we got to talk about her more because she came out of nowhere. Her and Millie at the beginning. Just where I was like, who cares? By the end of the series, I thought Millie and Annie were probably like at least top six characters.
Yeah.
Luke loves Annie.
That's awesome. Do you think there's anybody out there who's like, I loved Bev Keane. I thought she was the best character ever.
I think people who love to hate people, I don't think that anyone super religious was actually watching the show because they know that it's going to end bad for them.
Okay,
they probably think it's blasphemy, the show.
There's people out here, Bev's making a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably, honestly.
I mean, Luke, you said that Father Paul, his actor, may be one of the best of all three. Bev's probably would be one of the best of all three as well. I think she played that character to a T, and we talked about a million times how, you know, the angel as quote unquote the villain, but really it's Bev was the villain, and the finished as the villain.
Yeah, the show would not have been the same without her, and showing how crazed of a person and religious fanatic she actually is. So I mean, her acting definitely improved the value of the show without a doubt. To go off things that I liked, how awesome was it when Father Paul says, you know, everybody's welcome in the church. It doesn't matter if you didn't go to church. Come in. You'll be fine here.
When he was yelling?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Goes in. He sees his daughter, Sarah, pouring gasoline. Heartbreaking. I literally stood up and threw my hands up in the air when he's in the middle of talking and Sturge shoots her. I was heartbroken.
Oh my gosh.
Before the heartbreak. Holy shit.
Well, that was my number two moment when she doesn't suck the blood was going to be my number two.
Dude, it was literally I was screaming. I was like, mm-hmm. atta girl, because I was pissed. You're fighting to fucking kill all these people. And Father Paul was pouring it in. I was like, oh, come on, don't become one. And she just goes, and spits it all out.
I was worried, man. That would have sucked if she woke up.
Yeah, I thought it was so badass.
I'm giving a shout out to myself because we all got everybody right about who we thought was going to die. But I got it more right, you know. On it wasn't the end. I got a real
What are you talking? My character died twice.
Who was your character?
Ali.
No. The baby died and stayed dead in this story. So I did fine.
Who did I say?
We don't know. We didn't know last episode. We don't know this episode, he said.
I was right then.
You were definitely right.
Unless
you said Warren.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, Kathleen, you said Lisa. Warren and Lisa were dying.
I honestly may have said Lisa.
Oh, my gosh. That's hysterical if you did.
That's ass.
Which we all agree would have made the story way more powerful if she died by her mom in the church,
yep.
Right?
Yes, I agree.
If Warren was the sole survivor, that would have justified highlighting him early in episode one a little bit. You start with him, you end with him. It makes sense. He watched all this chaos happen. He was in the religious family. I would have liked that a little bit more, but it's fine. Like, I still like that he lived.
Yeah. I needed more from Warren, but that's fine.
Me too.
His friend's a piece of shit. Fuck that
dude,
guy.
Okay, but I loved the moment between Sturge and the friend. Yep. What was the friend's name? Do we have?
It was like Bobby. Something like that.
I was going to say Beaker.
No.
Not Bowl.
Bowl was the one that died from the voice change.
Yeah, he was the one
His
that was
racism
in
the- was consistent. Because he's the one who says Aladdin in the first scene.
Oh, and then he says something to the sheriff, right? Yeah. Which was like, when that happened, I was like, Jesus.
Well, he shot him.
Oh, that was
yeah. He shot him. So good. Yeah. So that was consistent. Fuck that guy. Absolutely fuck that guy.
Sturge had some depth, too.
Uker.
For Uker?
That's his name, Uker. Yeah. I knew I was right. I said,
Luker.
That was a great interaction because they both realized they fucked up. They weren't the religious, super heavy Bev level, and they realized they were wrong. They realized they were going to die, and they just like had a moment of two characters I did not think were going to get solo dialogue time, and I just thought that was good because, I don't know, I felt like all of the end of the citizens was pretty damn good. Ed Flynn was awesome.
Yep,
yeah.
I agree.
Awesome.
That was badass how he didn't chomp on anybody. But when you said Sturge's friend, I thought you were talking about the guy he saved.
Aww.
Yeah, I liked him. Or I liked that moment.
And
yeah,
I was like, oh my god, this guy's like sitting there going, I killed my wife, I killed my sons, no idea what's going on. He's like, why did I do that? And Bev's sitting there like, nope, should have gone to church.
And you could have saved them.
That emphasized her villainy. I mean, she literally was like, look, I'm seeing all these familiar faces. I haven't seen you one day in church in all these years. And then she's getting mad at Sturge for bringing him back. And he's saying, oh, he was always nice to me, you know? And she's like, we didn't discuss this. I said only special cases you could bring back after you kill them. And she's like the ringleader.
Cracked up when she was like, which we discussed about, but never mind.
Yeah.
Now you can't come back.
And then she just salt in the wound, like, you could have brought him back, but you don't have any faith and you didn't come to church and you didn't know this and that. It's like,
so fucked
Bev.
Up. Thank God he died right after. Didn't have to deal with that for too long.
Let's keep highlighting some of these other citizens because Ali was, that was awesome. That was a great moment too. They fucked up. Bev fucked up the second she shot the sheriff. Because if she didn't do that, who knows if Ali would have done all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just such a good moment because I liked him, especially in the early episodes. I thought he was going to be a bigger and better character than he turned out to be, like screen time wise. But just the fact that he saved a day in front of his dad and his dad got to die next to him, like that was an incredible moment. Like, you guys might have had this thought as well, but I'm happy that the sheriff died first.
Yeah, didn't have to see him burn. Yep.
And yeah,
it was
me
better
too.
That way. A little bit of coincidence. I'm not gonna lie, but I like that coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
That was awesome. They were just praying as the sun was coming up. I had a little bit of a why the hell would you do that moment with the sheriff putting the gasoline on the rec center while everybody was there. Yeah. Bev even said, I thought you were going to be more of a coward about it and do it while we were asleep. And I was like, that's a fantastic fucking point.
Yep.
Why didn't they just chill for
Holy
a little bit?
Holy crap. Why didn't they do that?
And then burn
them. Yeah.
And then, I don't know, because the whole response was, well, I'm not alone, am I? And then Aaron
comes
there,
out.
I guess because they wanted to ensure that they could burn the inside. That's the best I could come up with. But I was like, that's so stupid. Just chill, hang out. They were about to go in and then just burn them down.
It's just the plot device for the climactic scene.
People struggling with the flame to light the gas that they put is my least favorite thing in the world.
Yeah, when they're just like,
throw it, dude.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I had major anxiety when Warren and Lisa put the gasoline on the vampire.
Yeah.
And they're walking out. I'm like, dude, drop it. Who cares about his extra feet? Just drop the match.
Seriously.
Man. Like, he's going to move.
Yep.
Yeah. I just couldn't believe that was happening. We already talked about it, but he's just getting lit up by the gunfire. They just start pouring gasoline on him. They're pretty much like, hey, man, we're coming for you. Mm-hmm. we're going to chill here for a second too and give you a little time if you want to actually get up from stop chomping this guy and attack us. Oh, you're not going to? All right, cool. We're going to light you on fire, bro. It was, I don't know.
I'll buy the Aaron part because she did a good job. He was going to take notice, just like he should have in the Warren and Lisa scene. He was going to take notice of her cutting the wings, but then she like grabs
pulls
his head
him back
pulls
in.
Him back.
Yeah,
that was much better because it gave a reason. He's bloodthirsty and there was a distraction versus, I don't know.
That was pretty genius.
And he actually notices them and waves them off.
Yeah, he goes...
Yeah, he actually like gets shot and goes, no, rah, rah, you know?
When that was funny.
Sipping for the blood.
When Aaron was getting chomped on, when she pulled out the knife, I was like, what are you doing? Like, stabbing him's not going to do anything. He just got shot. And she starts cutting up the wings, and I was like, oh, that's pretty smart. But then I thought it was pretty smart, but at the end, he heals from bullet wounds, right?
Yeah.
So why can't his wings heal from...
I thought about that wounds? A lot, but I think there was an explicit moment. I think it was when Riley died, right? They said it took him... When he wakes up and has the conversation after becoming a vampire, I think it's in the beginning of episode 6, where Father Paul says, he either said it took you 6 hours to heal versus like it took me a while longer, or it took you X amount of time.
Sure.
It took me six hours to heal. He did at least put a piece in there that it takes time to heal.
Okay.
And she cut a lot of the wing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I honestly didn't expect him to be able to fly as much as he was shown flying either.
Yeah.
But I thought about that. And they also said they're 30 miles out. He was dead. He's dead in my head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we saw, even with Father Paul, like he got shot in the head and it took a while for him to get back up. Yeah,
I'm okay with the healing. I've thought about that a lot, too, because I thought that bothered me, but it didn't really.
But Luke, let's give you some more props, dude. It's Luke's prop night. He brings up last episode. He wanted to know, is it going to be very important, the father-daughter relationship? Is it going to come into play? And it was a huge part, and when it was one of the best parts of the episode.
Agreed. Yeah, I was going to talk on that, too, because even though we guessed it, we knew she was going to be his daughter. I think exactly what Paul said, how he walked in, and that was their confrontation. I thought that was great. I loved Millie waking up. I thought she was going to be Carnage for some reason. When you get yeeted out of the building like that, I didn't realize that, like, them chomping on your neck, like, he coming at you, like, you'll be fine soon. If he grabs you like that after that scream, you are beat. You are bull.
Yeah.
Like, you're not
you're bull.
You know, you're bull. You're literal, like,
but bull wasn't taking the sack, so he just was dead straight
okay
up.
True. So she wakes up hot girl and goes in and I like that conversation. I like that Millie goes, I was never gonna do that, when he's like, I should have like been braver. I should have said something. I
ran
wasted. And he was like,
I was waiting for you to ask me to give it up,
because I would have. And she's like, I was never gonna do that. I'm not ruining my husband's life, Sarah's life, my life, or yours.
Four four humans' life. I'm not gonna do that.
I thought that was really great and emotional, something we needed. And then I liked it again later, of course, when Sarah didn't take the blood. I liked everything about that. Although I will take a little bit away from Father Paul, because let's just go back for a second. Episode 6 was fucking lit with the chaos. The chaos in the church, shooting Bev, that turned it up to 10. Them in 7, ripping people out of houses, still, my jaw was like on the floor. I'm like, I cannot believe that this is all going to end badly. This is going to be one of those towns where people disappear and you don't know what happened. Like, it's going to be one of those. Father Paul didn't do a damn thing to help. He didn't try for 1 second until that end, of course, when he's like, everyone's welcome in here, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, that was a good speech, but he was straight chilling.
But I think that his trajectory changed when Sarah was killed. Okay, so he walks into the church saying everyone could come in. He sees that she's going to light it up, and he says something like good or something.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, down with it. If they lived... Meaning Sarah, if Sarah lived, I don't know, like, what his next plan would have been. Like, if he would have been like, all right, let's get all the people that aren't vampires and to safety or something. Or if he was just going to be like the way he was to end the episode, where he's just like, all right, I'm going to accept my fate and I'm waiting for the sun, just like every other vampire. I don't know. But the Sarah thing was a big deal, obviously, to him and his trajectory for the rest of the episode.
I love how when Millie came to after dying, she walked up to Father Paul. And he says to her, did he hurt you? She's like, yeah, a lot.
Yeah, and it's your fault, bro.
Started, like, cracking up, which I don't know if it was meant to be funny or not, but
it definitely wasn't. But I agree, it was funny in a way that's like, yes, buddy.
Yeah.
He ripped me out of here.
Grabbed me with his claws.
Yeah, he busted
this thing
through the
that
door
you're
with
calling
me
an
first.
Angel screeched. And threw me through the front door.
But I do want to back to the positive side of the Paul thing, I really liked the ending, like when the sun's coming up for the three, and right before the sun peaks over, he rips his priest collar off and throws it into the river.
Yeah.
That was like a cool final denouncement. He's like, he knew he fucked up the entire time, but that was just a cool symbolism moment of him pulling the white collar off that he said he would have done if Millie ever asked him in life. Mm-hmm. That was a good moment.
I wish they talked about that bridge a little bit before. Bring it up, but I mean, what?
True.
Yeah, I mean, it was still cool.
It's a pretty shitty bridge for you to love as a child, dude.
Hey, fuck up, dude. All bridges
are cool.
He's not
making fun of you. He's making fun of Sarah.
I know.
Paul's like, damn, I love that bridge. Stop making fun of me, bro.
He takes offense on behalf of Sarah for the bridge.
So my one question about the Father Paul storyline is, and we already talked about it, and Jimmy had a theory on it, but we never got a full answer, was how did he die the first time? Was it the poison that Bev just, like, used on everybody? Is it, like, confirmed?
I'm way more in on the idea that he was poisoned by Bev.
I just don't understand. Jimmy laid it all out last episode. She killed him to prove and say, hey, like, you came back. You're, like, the chosen one. I just wish they showed something about it, explained it. I guess I needed a spoon fed to me.
I just think that was the whole purpose of the focusing in on the rat poisoning. I don't know if it's if it's like the scene after, Jimmy. Do you remember when they show they show the rat poisoning like a little bit after
in a montage? Yep.
She's like putting it back on the show.
But. Yeah. I did some research on it and I think it's up to interpretation on purpose. Some people are saying the poison and other people are saying that there was a little conversation with Sarah where she says, like, if you get too much of the concentration, maybe something happens at that point. So maybe at that point was when he had too much of the blood and it was just going to kill him to turn him into the vampire anyway. But it was so similar to the poison death that I can't see how it isn't.
Yeah. I mean, he was vomiting up like the same colored foam melting inside shit. So,
yeah,
I have to assume that.
All right. So what else do we want to bring up before we get out of here? Because I know we went through the majority of the episode just by talking about our parts, and I'm sick of talking about the vampire. Let's just, if we can avoid talking about the angel, let's do it.
One thing that happened episode two that I've been waiting for an explanation for that we never got. Why was the mayor so sketchy on the beach? Remember we talked about, he was like, oh, the starlings dropped dead 10 years ago. And like, he just rambled on and on and on. Was he just nervous because he's the mayor and some crazy chaotic thing happened in his town?
I brought it up last pod and I said that was, you could just chalk that up because there was nothing deeper. And we knew that by last time we podcast, I think, that there wasn't going to be something.
Yeah.
Right.
So I don't know. I guess it was just how we took it. I don't think there was anything really that crazy about it.
Strange.
Yeah. Luke pretty much gave his explanation just saying, I'm trying to save face as the mayor of the town. And I was fine with that answer.
For a second, I really was confused about the rules about rezzing, because the whole Sturge rezzing the family man, that threw me off so badly. I was like, why did they need to do that? But nobody else needed to do it. You guys were good with that, right? On first watch, that you knew he didn't take the sack.
Yeah. That's just exactly how Riley was. You know, you can kill him or have him on the verge of death and feed him the sack right before death or as he's dying and he'll come back.
They showed the mayor doing it once or twice during that whole pulling people out of their homes montage. So I guess, like what Bev said, they said, okay, there's a few people that we can turn. Mm-hmm. Here they are. And Sturge just went crazy.
Yeah, I was about to flip the table when I thought for some reason that Annie wasn't going to come back. When she slid
her
door, I was like, okay, this breaks all of the rules. Dude, you should have seen my note. She better wake the fuck up. I was like, typing. And then she does. And I was like, that's good. But it's still that Annie moment, top tier.
Getting back with Ed. We talked about it real briefly, but the fact that they're like, I can feel this hunger. And Ed was like, yeah, I feel it too, but just fighting against it. And we don't have to do it.
Right. We don't have to do it.
That was
Henry Thomas, man. He's a saint.
He's awesome.
Yeah, listen to our interview with Henry Thomas when we talked to him after Bly Manor, because, wow, he's the man. I'm so happy we talked to him because he undersold it on the interview. I think I remember him saying he was barely in Midnight Mass.
Yeah.
He wasn't like a main character, but I wouldn't say he wasn't an A or a B character, but he was definitely a C character. Had lines, had an impact, and he crushed it acting-wise, of course, especially in the end with that scene we just mentioned with Annie. So I did really like how Annie and Ed turned out, because I had a misconception from the beginning. I thought they were just going to be obstacles to Riley, and they were for a little bit, but their resolution was good.
Yeah, it's strange that they ended up still singing hymns going into their death, waiting for the sunrise, still singing the church songs, even though the church kind of turned on them and killed them, but they still have their faith. It's interesting. And I mean, so the rest of the town, that was the whole point. They were like, you know, coming together.
Still have their faith. I mean, that's probably another moral of the story for Flanagan. All right, guys, one more pause here because I have another book recommendation from our new friend, Richard McCrowan. We've been talking about all the religious content in Midnight Mass. And Luke, I know you said you're a big fan of religion and fiction, so I think this one will definitely interest you. Salvation Mountain. College professor Jeffrey Cole and his three student assistants travel to the deep backwoods of the Appalachian Mountains in northern Georgia to do research on Father Divine, a rural preacher that 100 years ago created a fanatical religious cult that overwhelmed and murdered the mountain people in the dense backwoods of Salvation Mountain. But they find that the zealous fires are still burning strong and that the wages of sin is death. The novel Salvation Mountain by Richard McCrowan is available on Amazon, paperback, ebook, and also in a powerful audiobook on Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Salvation Mountain by Richard McCrowan. If religion is the opiate of the people, then this is the crack cocaine.
But I like that because they realized that this was all man created. It wasn't their religion.
Right.
And they were going back to it. Like, if we're really about to go to the afterlife, we're going to go to our version of the afterlife in our head and sing this out, which was powerful. And I have to bring this up because I thought it was incredible. Is it cinematography? I don't even know if it falls under that, or sound top, whatever. The sound at the end after they died and stopped singing. And it was just deathly silent for like a really long time. And I don't know how long you guys watch the credits for, but once it fades to black, all you hear is like the wind on the water that Warren and Lisa are sitting on just barely sounds. And it's just creepy. And it was so well done. And I thought that was a perfect way to end it, because I just didn't turn the black credits off of nothingness, because it was just, I thought it was powerful.
I agree. I thought it was awesome.
I was a little upset with the final line being, I can't feel my legs. I don't know why. I guess because we said if everybody reverts, we'll be upset.
I just took it like a last line where it just shows that this entire story happened. And, you know, whether it's the vampire, the angel, whatever it is, it's over. The effects of it are not going to last. And when you were bringing up, we were going to be mad if they revert, I think mostly we were talking about if the vampires reverted back to people and lived.
Okay, yeah.
I'm fine with the people who had the sack and their healing going back to just being normal people. That's fine. I would have just been pissed if they did the cop out where, say, like Annie loses her vampire power and becomes a normal person again or something.
All the townspeople don't die in the end.
Right.
Gotcha. I think that line honestly seems to me like something Flanagan probably wrote at the beginning. He was probably like, I'm just going to end it with Warren and Lisa escaping. And just doing that, like, that wouldn't surprise me at all if you told me that was one of the first things like he decided he wanted to end it on. But I could see where your complaints come in. Like, I don't love it, but I also, once Flanagan talked about it, like, it's fine. The concentration thing also, it vibes with me for the Aaron not coming back as a vampire so quickly either. I don't know. I'm not saying I loved it, not saying I hated it.
I just think that, you know, we should emphasize the fact that we talked about this in the very beginning of the episode. We're comparing this to one of our favorite shows of all time, Hill House, and another very, very, very strong series or, you know, season with Bly Manor. If we're going to hit with numbers here, I honestly go 10 out of 10 for Hill House. And then, you know, maybe Bly is a 8.5 and maybe Midnight Mass is 8.5 or 8. You know, we're talking about good television. Mm-hmm. We're just comparing it to some of the best television. So that's why it seems like we may be being a little negative here, but that's the point of our podcast. We're going to critique stuff. But yeah, this was a great show. Really enjoyed it. Going to watch anything Flanagan comes out with from now on. I'm going to go backwards and watch some of those movies. I know Paul Emily's going to make you do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
We have a couple weeks until Halloween, so I'm going to knock those out.
This is a little bonus content for any of you fantasy nerds out there, but tell me, at least one of you two had the thought when the ash started falling, like Miss.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because I was just thinking, this is what it would have been like to live on the Mistborn world.
Oh, yeah.
Shout out Brandon Sanderson for the Cosmere. Like, holy shit. That's what I always picture whenever I see ash now. Even when I'm sitting by a fire, I see ash. I'm just like, this is what they live in.
Me too. And I mean, even going back further, we can talk about Game of Thrones with the ash falling in the throne room. But I was going Mistborn too.
Okay, baby.
So my final thoughts are as follows. I think that in Hill House and Bly, you really have a limited amount of characters. It's 9 and 10 episodes. You're spending all your time with maybe 6, 7 actors and actresses. Hill House a little bit more because they're kids and adults, which just doubled the time you're spending with them because you are spending their whole lives with them. You see them as kids, yeah. See them as adults. You fall in love with them. Bly, you're literally with like the 6 people in the house for 9 episodes besides the 8th episode, the special episode. This one felt like there was probably too many characters, less episodes, and meaning that the stakes were lower for me that everyone died. If Hill House ended that everyone died, I would kill myself because I love those I love those characters so much.
It could have happened in the red room.
This one, I'm like, you know what? They probably had it coming for being such Bible banger. No, but I'm kidding. But I think that was what made it a little bit lesser for me. So I guess what my final thoughts are, I wish it was more episodes with more time, but I'm almost glad that it like more time with the characters themselves to like really build the stakes. But at the same time, I'm like, I'm glad it was 7 if it was going to be religion. I don't know if I could have hung on for 10. Mm-hmm. And I don't want more time just to stretch it. I only want more time if it was going to use it valuably with the characters. Do you guys agree? Did you feel the super high stakes with these characters?
I felt definitely more in love with the Hill House and Bly characters.
Yeah.
Their deaths would matter more to me than Midnight Mass characters.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, like you said, spending less time with these characters, knowing less about them, I'm not going to be as distraught because I don't know you as well.
Like, I'll definitely agree with about the stakes too, because it, to me, besides, because I didn't care that much about Warren and Lisa, to me, it felt like all or nothing. Either everyone's going to die or no one's going to die.
Yeah.
So you're right. That's actually a good point. And I never verbalize that in my head. So like now I guess you're right. Like the stakes weren't that high.
Yeah.
Overall, like, are you at least happy you watched it? Like you don't regret watching it?
Oh, absolutely not. I love anything Flanagan. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was up against 2 of my favorite shows of all time.
Yeah.
I know you guys don't think Bly's as good as Hill House, but Bly's right under Hill House for me. It's really up there. And I think that show would have a very hard time getting up there matching. So I mean, this is great. I would recommend, and I have recommended this show to anyone, especially people who are like me, who used to be religious or at least be like go to
raised
CCT.
With religion.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And fallen off. Or like my friend, one of my best friends, Bobby, still goes to church every Sunday. I'm like, you got to watch this show. Like, you're going to like it. Just like Paul knows way more religion than us three. And he enjoyed all that fucking junk. So. I loved it. Yeah, I loved it. And it's tough because if we were covering this and we didn't have to compare it to Hill House and Bly, we wouldn't be talking about them so much. We would just be like, it was cool. The comparison is evil.
It was sweet.
Okay. We didn't do any Ben Kill Marys for this season. It's only 7 episodes. We didn't know the characters that much. There wasn't that many selections. But for this one, we're going to do a Kate Siegel, Mike Flanagan Ben Kill Mary.
Yeah.
So you know I got to marry Theo, baby.
So our options here, for if you don't remember their names, we have Aaron Green in Midnight Mass.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We have Viola in The Haunting of Bly Manor. And then
Dang.
We have Theodora Crane in The Haunting of Hill House. And the catch is you would have to bring this person and all their mental baggage and you're marrying them in real life. Or
okay.
You're banging them in real life or killing them.
Easy. I marry Theo, my gay queen. I'm here for that. She is amazing. I mean, I don't think there's any flaws with Theo. By the end, she was fine with her girl. I mean, she had big issues, of course. I mean, their whole life is issues, but I think Theo would be cool. I mean, that kind of sucks because Aaron would be a good one to marry. Shit. Either way, I think I'm gonna... Fuck me. Okay. Yes. I'm going to marry Theo. I'm going to kill Aaron and I'm going to fuck Viola because
hot
and a period piece. I'm into it. I'm in the 1800s all of a sudden.
I call next. Okay, cool.
Get it.
Back. I'm definitely going to marry Aaron Green because she's the one who's the sanest. And well, by the end, she gave up her religion. She was all in on Riley's ideology on death. And I love that because I have the same exact mindset. And I'm going to bang Viola because she was crazy and awesome. And I also would have felt wrong banging Theo because, you know, she's mostly into girls. I don't know if she was bi or whatever.
You said,
but...
that,
Did I? Yeah, it makes sense. And also, she would freak the fuck out if she touched me. I don't want her seeing things and shit.
What do you have to hide, Luke? What do you have to hide from Theo?
I love Viola. That's it.
Yeah. They all look the same for some reason, all three of them.
Oh, man. I guess I'm going to... this is tough. All right, you know what?
Viola's got some crazy in her, and that's a good thing.
I want to marry Theo because I want to be brother-in-laws with... I can't even think of his name. What's the character?
Steven?
Name? Steve. Steve sees a ghost.
You like Steve?
Yeah, he's a famous author. That'd be cool.
What about Luke? I'd rather be stepbrothers with Luke or brother-in-laws with Luke.
Yeah, he's cool too. I mean, he got my back just as long as he's out of rehab.
As long as he's not getting well, dude.
Yeah. I'm going to bang Viola because I loved Lady of the Lake. I think it was the coolest fucking explanation of why everything was happening.
Incredible episode.
Yeah, it was such a good episode.
It's up there for out of the all three. I think that's like my second or third favorite episode.
She looks great in black and white.
Oh, yeah.
And she looks great in everything.
And then, yeah, I guess that leads me to kill Erin Green. And sorry, but she's going to die anyway. So fucking I'm just speeding it up.
All right, take us home, Jimmy. You got a lot of variety there, so you won't.
Yeah, actually, I'm surprised that we didn't get very similar answers, but I think I'm going to marry Erin Green. I think she's the best version of Kate Siegel's characters for marrying. I think she was awesome. I liked a lot her relationship with Riley. I liked her ride or die-ness with Riley, so she's going to ride or die with me until we both turn into vampires and burn in the sun. I am going to bang Theo.
Gloves on or off?
Gloves are off. She can see whatever she wants to see. I'm not hiding anything. And then I'm going to kill Viola, and hopefully she doesn't come back to haunt me.
For what it's worth, I still would stand by that Theo is the best acted version of Kate Siegel.
I think so.
But yeah, she had the most lines, and it was probably the easiest to be the best acting version because that was like the best written show, but... yeah, either way, Kate Siegel is just the shit. I was watching yesterday on TV is 21, you know, the movie with Kurt.
Oh, yeah.
It's Professor X. McAvoy is the main character. And
no, that's one. No, that's one.
Did I say 21?
21 is I love that movie too, though.
He looks the same as the freaking main character. You're right. McAvoy in Wanted and Angelina Jolie, that version of Angelina Jolie looks so much like Kate Siegel.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, they're both just perfection. But
yep.
What a powerful bang Hail Mary to end up Midnight Mass.
All right, guys. So to finish this episode up, we want to bring up the fact that we have one more special episode for you guys based on Midnight Mass, because this is our last episode coverage of it. The finale is over. So we just had today the Newton Brothers on our podcast. In the last 7 years, they've composed every Mike Flanagan film and television show. They are one of the greatest parts of all of his work. The two of them together, meaning Flanagan and the Newton Brothers, are phenomenal. We had such a great time talking to them. One of the Newton Brothers, Andy, was the organist in Midnight Mass. He made his debut, his television debut on Midnight Mass. We got a chance to talk to him about that. We had a great conversation with them. That should be dropping probably next week or so. So look out for that.
The coolest guys ever. They were cool to talk to. Definitely.
Yeah, they were such cool guys. Open invitation to come back on the pod for any time. They said they're working on another thing for Flanagan right now. They're actually in crunch time, and they still took time out of their day to talk to us. We'll be covering whatever he does next. So can't wait for that. If you like what you heard, you can find us on BingeTownTV.com, BingeTown TV on Twitter and Instagram. We have a Patreon now. We want to thank our patrons. We love doing our exclusive episodes for them. We have exclusive interviews, video interviews with the celebrities that we have interviewed, including the Newton Brothers. That will be on the Patreon. Plenty of exclusive stuff for you guys. We can't wait to keep doing more. Patreon.com/BingeTownTV. You can find it on our Instagram link in the bio. You can find it on our website. Once again, we are BingeTown TV, and thank you so much for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network. You're listening to the Geekscape Network.